This is America on the Road, winner of the International Automotive Media Conference Gold Medal Award for Radio, and now in its 24th year on the air. Thanks for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world. Today, we're going to take a very deep dive into the most dependable cars, trucks, and SUVs in America. America on the Road is brought to you by Mercury Insurance and DrivingToday.com. If you're looking to save some money, you should switch to Mercury for your auto and home insurance. Californians save an average of $670 with Mercury, so imagine how much you could save. Get a quote today at MercuryInsurance.com. Hi, this is Jack DeRed. With me is co-host Chris Teague. He is in Maine. He's enjoying, I think, a new home in Maine, and we wish him nothing but blessings in that new home. Chris, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Jack. For the very first time in our recording history, I have an office with a door that shuts. So no more car studios or crouching in closets to hide from the kids while we record.
There you go. Well, the crouching in closets thing, I don't want to hear any more about that, okay? So keep that to yourself. I am on the West Coast in Southern California. You were battling the winter in Maine, but Maine is so beautiful. I spent some time watching Maine Cabin Masters again over the weekend, one of my favorite shows on cable TV, and it just seems so pleasant there some of the time. And some of the time, not so much.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, winters can be brutal here, but right now, you know, it's actually quite a bit nicer here than many other parts of the country.
It was funny. I have daughters in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and it was colder there than it was in Reykjavik, Iceland over the weekend. So that's kind of nuts. But back to the show, off the weather report. This week we have a very special guest. His name is Ryan Nagode. He has been on the show before. He's one of the key executives and a design guy for Dodge. Going to be talking about their performance vehicles. He and I took a very detailed look at the Charger Hellcat Redeye and the Dodge Durango SRT Hellcat, both of which I got a chance to drive fairly recently, so we'll talk with him about that. In the car review segment, Chris will discuss what particular vehicle, Chris?
The 2021 Toyota Avalon Limited.
Ah, the Avalon Limited. And interestingly enough, I'll be talking about the 2021 Volkswagen Arteon. So we have two vehicle models that begin with the letter A and end with the letters O-N. It's a
important factor to consider.
Yeah, it's a theme show, I think. But before we do any of that, we'll take a look at the latest in automotive news. And we have some behind-the-scenes news, actually, because we have early information. It's just now released information. From J.D. Power on their vehicle dependability study. They do this each year, the U.S. Vehicle Dependability Study. The good news is that vehicles are more dependable than they have ever been. The bad news is in-car technology is continuing to be a big pain in the neck to car owners. And this is interesting to me because it's not only a problem for vehicle owners in their first 90 days of ownership. The vehicle dependability study looks at vehicles after 3 years of ownership. 3 years to learn how the infotainment system works. And yet, it's not happening. So that is interesting. You know, what's your take on all that, Chris? Is this a solvable problem?
I think it is, but it's funny because you and I talk frequently about the fact that, you know, we drive a vehicle for 7 or 5 days or so and have trouble with the infotainment system. And I always speculate that people who own these things, you develop, you know, some sort of muscle memory to get through this. But after 3 years, if they're still having problems, that says something about the complexity of the technology overall.
Yeah. What they're suggesting at J.D. Power is people will just give up. And they do give up. And they walk away from the technology in their car. They're also looking at various apps that most people are carrying a smartphone now. And you connect your smartphone and you have navigation if you want it. You have a bunch of things that otherwise you would rely on the vehicle to have. So maybe in the future, we're going to get a much simpler interface from the car manufacturers anyway, and let the app makers figure out all the usability problems.
Yeah, I'm all for that. You know, these things are all added cost options right now. So the more simplified it can be may end up adding value to the cars and the vehicles for consumers that don't have to spend the extra cash.
Right. Interesting to me was the individual vehicle that took the top spot among all vehicles out there in the vehicle dependability study. It wasn't a vehicle that would be particularly intuitive to me. Do you know what it is, Chris?
I do not, Jack.
It is the Porsche 911. That was the highest ranked model in dependability in the 2021 study. It's the second time in the last 3 years that the 911 has been named the most dependable model. Last year, the most dependable model was one that I think is much more intuitive to us, more predictable by those of us in the car business, and that's the Lexus ES, actually the kiss and cousin of the vehicle you're going to be testing today.
It is. It's interesting. It just, you know, speaks to the robustness of the construction of the 911, I guess, and also maybe that people are more inclined to keep up with routine maintenance.
Yeah. Well, I think, too, when you're spending that much money on a car or when that much money is being spent on a car, the manufacturer is coming to the conclusion, hey, we better screw this thing together really, really well. and we didn't see that, I think, in German cars maybe 10 years ago, but I think more recently, they're getting the message that, hey, you know, people are spending big time premiums for your vehicles. Maybe you just should make them work for them really, really well.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, one of the most interesting things about this study for me is that two or three of the most popular categories of vehicles are ones that have the most room to improve, you know, trucks and SUVs. And J.D. Power themselves even note that it's important that automakers address the problem, given the popularity of those categories. So,
yeah, it's I'm glad you pointed that out because it's really true that it's interesting that people are picking out vehicle segments where the quality isn't as good as it is in the car segment, right? Trucks and SUVs, overall, the quality isn't as good. Of course, quality varies from model to model, and that's why a little later in the show we're going to be talking to you about models. But in terms of brands, certainly, some things are fairly predictable and some less so. Lexus ranked highest in overall vehicle dependability. This is the ninth time in 10 years that Lexus has topped the list, so I guess that's fairly predictable. Last year, though, it didn't top the list. The Genesis brand did. Runner-up was Porsche. Kia was third. Kia was also the top-ranked mass-market brand for the first time. And then came Toyota, Buick, and Cadillac. So, you know, some brands that you might predict and then brands you wouldn't necessarily predict. I'm not sure that everybody out there, and probably because they haven't sampled the vehicles in a while, would say that the General Motors brands, that Buick and Cadillac, would be that highly ranked in terms of dependability.
Yeah, it's a total surprise, but more power to them.
Yeah. And overall, reliability is getting better. But as we said, these infotainment systems, very problematic still. And although they improved in quality a bit and reliability, just they're not to the place where I think a lot of people feel comfortable with them. So we'll see what happens with that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we will talk a little bit more on a model level about this, but what's a new story you have for us, Chris?
I'm seeing, and this is a big story that's come out over the past couple of days, that Ford has promised that all of its cars that are on sale in Europe will be fully electric by 2030. So this is going to be sort of a phased-in approach where by mid-2026, they're saying zero emissions capable, all electric or plug-in hybrid vehicles will be the name of the game. And then by 2030, they will be completely all electric. And this is going to be thanks to a $1 billion investment in the Cologne, Germany Electrification Center, as they're calling it.
Well, and, you know, we were just talking about General Motors. I was musing when I saw this story a little earlier that General Motors really doesn't have a European footprint anymore. I mean, Europe used to be the place where, you know, some pretty cool GM stuff would originate and then it would come over the pond to us. And that's just not happening. And it's not happening on the electrical vehicle front either, although they do have an interesting electric vehicle that's leaping into the market, and that is the Chevy Bolt EUV that is following in the footsteps of the Chevy Bolt EV. This is the U stands for utility, and it is their utility version of essentially the same platform. They're updating the 2022 Chevrolet Bolt, and then on a longer, almost 3-inch longer wheelbase, here comes this sport utility that. It's not really competitive with the Mustang Mach-E, but the fact of the matter is that it is another utility-like vehicle that's all electric. So we'll see how that plays. It'll be interesting to see how that is received in the market.
Yeah, I actually really like the last generation vehicle, so it'll be cool to see what comes out. But the thing that's interesting about this Ford announcement is that, you know, I don't think a lot of people think about Ford as an international manufacturing entity, but they have plants and facilities all over the world. So, you know, to be able to build this right in Germany in the domestic market for that is really interesting for them. But also because they've phased out most of their cars in America or the United States. So these are going to be Fiestas, Focuses, or Foci, I guess, the Mondeo, okay, yeah, and others. So they're going to be a lot larger array of vehicles that are getting this electrification than we see here. So I'm really excited to see what comes out of all this.
Yeah. It will be fascinating, and we'll wonder if some of that doesn't just trickle over to the United States. Not, certainly, probably. I don't know that's a great construction, but it's probably not going to happen on the car side here just because the market is not demanding cars. But electrification seems to be coming. We'll see whether there doesn't, at the same time, and I'd love your take on this, Chris, before we go to break. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of consumer push for this. It just seems like we're seeing more and more manufacturers get into this for one reason or another. What's your take?
Yeah, you know, I think consumers for one reason or another are, I don't want to say scared, but reluctant to commit to it wholeheartedly. You know, for me, and I've said this many times, the infrastructure just isn't here. And I think a lot of people realize that too, but there's also the unknown. So, you know, whether the manufacturers can push it to the tipping point or not is yet to be seen, but I think it'll be really interesting to watch over the next 5-10 years.
Right. And we will be right here on America on the Road to watch that. So we'll look for that. Well, coming up is the car review segment. Chris will be discussing the 2021 Toyota Avalon. And I'll be talking about the 2021 Volkswagen Arteon. So we have to watch how we enunciate to make sure we're not tripping over each other when we do that. So stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back right here on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack DeRad with you, along with Chris Teague. We're so glad that he is with us, testing vehicles in the rigors of Maine. And the vehicle you tested this week was what, Chris?
The 2021 Toyota Avalon Limited. And I have to be completely honest in saying that I'm a little bit of a Toyota fanboy. I've owned several of the both Lexus and Toyota vehicles over the years. But I kind of fell out of love with them in the past few years. The vehicles are still solid. They have some great features and technology, but the styling got a little bit too aggressive for me, and I was looking for some excitement, which obviously came back with the Toyota Supra a couple of years ago, and they've done, I think, a good job with the TRD versions of the Camry and the Avalon. But in any case, I tested the Avalon Limited, which is not, as you would think, the very range-topping model. There are three actual trims that fall above it in terms of price and some options. But overall, this is what would have been considered a Lexus a few years ago. Leather interior, heated and ventilated front seats, all-wheel drive, 3.5-liter, 301-horsepower V6 with 267 pound-feet of torque. And does very well in the snow with the optional all-wheel drive. So all around, you look at this, and a few years ago, like I said, you'd think it would be a Lexus, just kind of with the take there. But Jack, what do you think about how Toyota's moved with the Avalon and the Camry, both sporty and on the luxury side?
I think they've done a great job with both of them, actually. And I think in particular, maybe the Avalon, maybe they had farther to go with the Avalon. I mean, the first couple of generations of Avalon were pretty mundane, but then I really think they have started to hit their stride. And there's so much Lexus ES in the Avalon. You get so much value from that platform. As you say, it is in a lot of ways just like a Lexus without the badging. Maybe a little less premium interior, but a very, very nice interior, that's for certain. And just on the driving enjoyment side, I think it's actually quite surprising how fun the Avalon is to drive.
I agree. And you know, it's fun to drive while at the same time being smooth and confidence inspiring. We had a pretty big ice storm a couple of days ago. And early in the morning, I had to take my wife out for an errand. We hopped in, And the car finds its grip and goes. Obviously, it's not a rally car. It's not a sports car. But the ride and the communication through the steering wheel made for a very, I'll say, simple drive through what could have been a very slick, you know, greasy road. The inside, as I mentioned, the leather seats, there's plenty of front leg room and headroom. And Jack, I'm 6 feet tall, as you've heard probably 60 or 70 times by now. But no one was fighting for leg room sitting in the back seat behind me. Very much there, you know, a lot of cars like the Honda Accord and some others have gone to the fastback look with the sloping roof that tapers off behind the back seats. But the Avalon, if you can call it that, is old school in that it is a solid sedan. There's plenty of headroom in the back seat, even for kids in their car seats. This car had the full safety package. So blind spot monitors, rear cross traffic alerts, full speed, adaptive cruise control, and many others. A 9-inch touchscreen with a 14-speaker JBL premium sound system. And you and I have talked many times about Toyota's infotainment system. And this, as it was a few weeks ago when I reviewed the Tundra, is still a little bit more complicated than it needs to be, but is far smoother than it was even just a couple of years ago.
Yeah, well, I'm so glad to hear that. And I'm so glad to hear that you remain 6 feet tall. I was afraid maybe if you went out in the winter and got wet, you might shrink when you got back inside and warmed up. But I'm glad that you're still 6 feet tall. And it is a measure that you should be proud of. So good for you on that.
Well, and, I'll say my elbow bean boots do add probably a quarter of an inch, but I'll let that slide.
Yeah, well, and rightly so. You should be having those in Maine. Huh? That's great stuff. I love those boots. I love keeping my feet warm in the winter. warm and dry is a really good thing. So, and I was staying warm and dry in the Volkswagen Arteon. Now, the Arteon is probably not a nameplate that is familiar to a lot of people. It is a specialty, and it's one of these quote-unquote four-door coupes, which is a contradiction in terms in a lot of ways, but that's what they're calling them these days. And what that means is it's a highly styled four-door that looks more coupe-like, looks cooler, I guess, than a typical sedan would look. This time around for the 2021 model year, it has a new front end. The interior has been refined, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. There are new driver assistance options within the car, so that's good. It is a five-person vehicle, maybe a little more comfortable for four, but certainly five adults can fit in there. Plenty of luggage because it's almost like a little station wagon with its big hatch opening up. You can get good stuff like a massaging driver's seat, ventilated front seats, heated rear seats, leather seating surfaces, of course. If you want premium audio to hear America on the Road and our dulcet tones even more broadly, Harman Kardon premium audio is out there. The interior is really nice. And this is a good-looking car, too. I was in it earlier today with my wife, and she was remarking how one of the neighbors came by and said, oh, that's a really good-looking car. And it takes a lot for people to comment on the cars we have here because we have a new one every week. So that tells me that this is a looker. What is your take on the looks of the Arteon, Chris?
I absolutely love it. And, you know, not even 5 minutes ago, I just mentioned how the Avalon is not the same thing as the Arteon, but I think it's great looking. It kind of has a little bit of a classic, but also futuristic look that, you know, it just speaks to me, I guess is the cheesiest way to say it, but
yeah,
you know, not very practical for headroom in the back seat, especially for kids in car seats, as I frequently deal with, but can't beat it from my perspective on a look standpoint.
Yeah, well, if you'd like, I can introduce you and maybe you two can go out. Because I like the way that it's... Well, you're a married guy, so you couldn't possibly do that. You want to two-time your wife with a car.
Yeah,
a good idea. That would be horrible. It is powered by a 2-liter turbocharged four-cylinder engine. This is an overachieving engine because it creates 268 peak horsepower, 258 pound-feet of torque. Pretty good numbers, more numbers than you would expect from a 2-liter four-cylinder, that's for certain. You can purchase it with VW 4Motion all-wheel drive. In standard trim, it's a front driver. It's fun to drive. It is very maneuverable. It goes where you point it. All of that stuff's good. So this is a vehicle that I think is sadly under the radar. I think this, the Arteon deserves a lot more attention than it is getting. It is also not even all that expensive. I think its pricing, well, it starts, you know, somewhere around the mid-30s, $35,000 or something like that. And for what you're getting is a European specialty coupe, very highly styled, great interior, very interesting equipment inside. And you're not going to see yourself on every street corner, that is for certain. So I just think there's a lot to like about the 2021 Volkswagen Arteon.
Absolutely agree.
Well, it's nice that we agree, and we frequently agree, and sometimes we disagree, and that they're honest disagreements, at least on my side. You might be totally dishonest, but I'm inclined to doubt that, Chris. So those are our road tests for this week. The Toyota Avalon, certainly a gold standard in its segment, and getting better and better. I think both Chris and I agree with that. And Volkswagen Arteon, a vehicle I think that's really worth a look. It is a good-looking car. When you take a look, I think you'll like what you see. And at the same time, I think it's quite a value for a European luxury kind of sedan coupe. Swallows a lot of people and luggage and helps you arrive in style. So look for that. And when we come back, we're going to be looking at what are the vehicles that are the most dependable vehicles in the United States. So stay with us for that. With Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad with you. And thanks so much for being with us right here on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague. Jack Nerad back with you, and it's question and answer time here on America on the Road. We're so happy to take your automotive questions. We'd love to have you submit a question. It's very easy to do. Submit your question to editor@drivingtoday.com. That's editor@drivingtoday.com. Of course, drivingtoday.com is our sister website to America on the Road, so check that out. Of course, visit mercuryinsurance.com as well, our sponsor, Mercury Insurance. Check that out. And now we're going to tell you about the most dependable vehicles in the country, because we've had some listener questions about that. Of course, over and over again, we get the question, what are the most dependable vehicles out there? Well, now we have absolute chapter and verse from a very credible source, that is J.D. Power, with their just released, we had an early copy actually, just released U.S. Vehicle Dependability Study. And so we can tell you with some degree of accuracy what the most dependable vehicles are in various car segments. And so let's dive right in. And we'll dive right into a big segment, and that is the compact car segment. And lamentably, the most reliable vehicle in that segment is the Volkswagen Beetle, a vehicle that has gone out of production. We're never going to see that again. So that also indicates that these are vehicles that are 3 years old. So these are vehicles that have 3 years of mileage on them by their owners. Thus, we're able to tell how dependable they are. But the Volkswagen Beetle is the leader in the compact car segment. In the compact premium car, so more luxury-oriented, the winner is the Lexus ES. And that had been, the number one car overall last year. So that is a big winner in terms of reliability. And it's a sensual twin brother, or close to it. I guess you'd call them fraternal twins. In the large car segment is the Toyota Avalon, which is the winner in that segment. So that kind of makes sense that those vehicles that are very, very similar, share a lot of the same architecture, as they say in the car business, are both segment leaders in terms of dependability. Midsize car, big, big segment. And it's a place where you would think Honda Accord or Toyota Camry would triumph, but the winner is the Kia Optima. And neither the Accord nor the Camry are even in the top three. The next two are Hyundai Sonata and Ford Fusion. Among midsize premium cars, the highest ranked is a vehicle we like a lot. Is the Genesis G80. There is now a new version of the G80 out, but this was the previous G80. And the good news about these things, too, is they kind of stay to type. So if this generation of the G80 was pretty good in terms of dependability, there's a strong likelihood that the next generation would be. It's not a guarantee, of course, but it's likely. And then among midsize sporty cars, the sporty cars overall, the top choice is the, and the most dependable, is the Chevrolet Camaro. So that's a vehicle to look at in that segment. It's a fun vehicle too, very good looking. And then in the small premium car, this is a segment that is growing pretty significantly. One of our favorites is number two, and that's the Audi A3. But the number one is the BMW 2 Series. Maybe a series that you're not all that aware of, but that is a leader there. We're talking about the J.D. Power U.S. Vehicle Dependability Study and its results as we are looking at the most reliable vehicles in answer to listener questions about that. In the SUV segments, of course, the SUV is very, very popular these days. The compact premium SUV that's number one is the Porsche Macan. The compact SUV is probably not one you would initially think of as the highest dependability vehicle in the segment that includes the RAV4 and Honda CR-V. But number one is the Buick Envision. RAV4 is number two and Subaru Forester number three. Among large SUVs, this is a special vehicle to the Chevrolet household. No, to the NERAD household. We're talking about the Chevrolet Tahoe. We've been driving Chevrolet Tahoes for a long, long time and swear by them. So apparently we've chosen right because J.D. Power says, and their owners say, that they are very, very dependable. On the midsize premium SUV segment, we're looking at the number one vehicle being the Lexus GX. Vehicle we like a lot, midsize SUV. Another one not necessarily intuitive, I think. The Kia Sorento is the top in that very, very popular segment that includes the Toyota Highlander and the Honda Pilot and the Ford Explorer. Ford Edge is number three. Highlander is number two in that segment in terms of most dependable. And the highest ranked in dependability among small premium SUVs is the Mercedes-Benz GLA, which is also a really, really good-looking vehicle, a vehicle I like a lot. And then in small SUV, and that is a booming segment, the highest ranked vehicle in terms of dependability is the Kia Sportage. So a vehicle that we like a lot. Buick Encore, Buick scoring well in the SUV segments. not something you would necessarily guess would happen. And then let's look at pickup trucks because, wow, they are super popular. All the truck segments actually are very, very popular, and so let's look at those. The large, heavy-duty pickup truck that is most reliable is the Chevrolet Silverado HD. Ram 2500, 3500 is number two. Large, light-duty pickups, that's your typical pickup you would see out there. Toyota Tundra, built in San Antonio, Texas, is the number one, and then the Chevrolet Silverado number two, Ram 1500 number three, a lot of great choices there. And in midsize pickups, the Nissan Frontier is the most dependable. There's going to be an all-new Nissan Frontier for 2022. We have some of the data on that already, so look for that. And then there's the Honda Ridgeline, which is a very specialty vehicle in that segment. And finally, let's look at minivans. This one is, I think, fairly intuitive. One you would probably guess as the leader in the minivan segment, and that's the Toyota Sienna. This is a vehicle we like a lot, too. This new generation, this actually the dependability index covered a vehicle of the previous generation. But the newest generation that's just recently been introduced, I like a lot. I think they really come a long way to being competitive with the Dodge Grand Caravan, the Chrysler Pacifica. Those are the other two vehicles on this list. So a lot of great and dependable vehicles out there. Top brands are Lexus, Porsche, Kia, Toyota, and Buick, and Cadillac. Those are the top five. There's actually six of the top five because there was a tie for fifth. Is that right? Is that six? Yes, it is. I'm doing my counting here as I'm looking at my notes. And then there are the vehicles that are not so stellar, or at least brands that are not so stellar. They don't identify particular vehicles for this dubious honor. But the brands that don't score all that well in terms of dependability are Land Rover, and I'm reading from the bottom, Land Rover, Alfa Romeo, Jaguar, and Chrysler. And Volkswagen is one step up there. If Tesla were to be included here, and J.D. Power did do owner surveys on Tesla, but it is not officially included in the study for some technical reasons, actually, that have to do with where they were able to get the ownership surveys, Tesla would be toward the bottom, too. It would be, I think, fourth from the bottom, if I'm reading this correctly. It would have been outdone by Chrysler in terms of quality, and it would outrank only Jaguar, Alfa, and Land Rover in terms of overall quality. And I have to guess and wonder whether that is going to bite Tesla over time, especially when new and very interesting electric vehicles are available from other brands that offer better product quality. So we'll have to see how that develops in future weeks, in future months, in future years as this goes on. Certainly Tesla owners love their Teslas, so that has a lot to do with it as well in terms of what's going on. So that is our listener question, actually listener questions for this week. And thanks so much for staying with us through that. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Ryan Negotti of Dodge about a lot of Dodge performance vehicles. He is a designer there, does a lot of interior design. We're going to talk about a bit about that and about the Uconnect system that we like so much, the connectivity system that they have. So stay with us for that interview with Ryan Negotti and with Chris Teague. This is Jack Nerad with you. Thanks so much for being with us on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack Nerad with you. We are at Carolina Motorsports Park, so if you hear the squealing of tires in the background or the roar of exhaust, that's why. It's not something I had for lunch, although maybe. With me is Ryan Negotti. We have had him on the show very recently talking about TRX. Now we're going to talk about Uconnect and interiors as well. Ryan, thanks for being with us, number one.
Well, thanks for having me back. It's great.
Yes, thanks so much for being back. We have loved Uconnect probably since it was instituted, we being not only me, but other journalists. You know, we really appreciate how well it works and how intuitive it is. Now you're, I guess this would be the fifth generation, if five makes sense. Uconnect
Correct.
5 sounds like the fifth generation. Tell us a bit about what we should know just off the top about Uconnect 5.
Yeah, it's really, it's the fifth gen, as you mentioned. It's a culmination of, honestly, 15 years of really being in, you know, with our infotainment system. You know, 15 years ago, we launched the first gen of the system. And really, it's just been sharpening our pencils ever since, listening, getting the customer feedback, and really not making, you know, massive changes left and right, staying pretty straight and narrow, and just building upon what we have. The system, the brand new system that's launching in the 2021 Durango, as well as our Pacifica, is really, it's the culmination of those 15 years. It's the fastest version of this operating system that we've ever had. It's Android based, so that's something brand new for all of our Uconnect systems going forward. It's personalized, very much more personalized than even before. You have the ability to have up to 5 drivers assigned in the vehicle, as well as valet, and those profiles actually will transfer with you. So you get into another vehicle that has Uconnect 5, all of your settings will come right with it. So it's a very much more of a familiar, I think, of what you deal with, maybe on your personal phones, personal devices. It's a connection of that. Speaking of devices, we can have 2 iPhones connected at the same time. Or Android phones at the same time, which is great.
Yeah, you have a work phone and
Correct.
A personal phone, and I think you're listening on Spotify, maybe on your kid's Spotify or something like that, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it's a cool thing to be able to pick up a telephone call with your work phone, and then, yeah, maybe you have your other phone plugged in, you know, streaming your media, which is great.
It seemed like in the presentation this morning, more time was spent on Uconnect 5 than any other aspect of any of the vehicles we were looking at. And it strikes me that's maybe the right balance because it's so important. Tell our listeners how important it is and how important you think it is as an interior designer.
No, it's such a it's a centerpiece now. It's you know, like an exterior, you're based on the wheelbase, the proportions, you know. It's the infotainment system is definitely a good challenge for us. You know, we work with our user experience teams well in the size of the screens, the right content on there, and how it works well within the interior. I know myself and the team, you know, we're all about making sure it's integrated. We don't want to ever look like it's an afterthought, like we just decided to throw a large screen in there for just that sake. And that's something that I think this new system is allowing flexibility. The size of the screen has increased from the current Durango, but it looks at home within the in the Durango, and it's the rich graphics, you know. Also smooth, easy, you know, the pinching and zooming, swiping between the applications, you know, it feels like an extension of, say, a tablet that you have at your house.
Let's talk a bit about the orientation of the screen, because we've seen some vertical screens and now you've gone horizontal with this. Tell us why and what the advantages of going
for us. It does open up from an interior design perspective. It opens up that flexibility. So as we spoke earlier, RAM was a little bit more 12-inch screen, vertical in nature, right? And that fits to the RAM character. Now, if I put my other hat on and I'm in this Dodge and SRT realm, we really love this thinner profile width read that we have. And the interior itself improved with that, you know, how we sculpted the interior. So for us, fitting in this 10-1, that's a little bit more of a landscape type of feel to it, really seamless with the applique that's around it. That speaks well, and I think that's the things going forward you're going to see is that we can adapt this system to, you know, a variety of sizes depending on what works, you know, right for the interiors we're working
on. Do you think we will see that in trucks, or do you think trucks, just by their very nature, are more vertical? Maybe you have more vertical space in a cab than you do in a car.
I know, personally speaking, that's where, you know, at least where we've been, and that's I think some part of the DNA that we've started with RAM, and then you see this driver-centric little tilt to the display, which we have on the new Durango. It matches the counterparts that we have within the stable of Charger and Challenger in terms of about a 7-degree tilt to the driver. But it's just enough to hint at this driver-centric performance feel, but it doesn't ignore the passenger, because we know that this Durango, it's not just about a driver. You're going to be hauling your family with you. That's the whole point behind an SUV, and, you know, stuff, dogs, whatever, you name it.
Is 7 degrees better than 10 or 12?
I think we found a happy medium. You know, I there's no prescribed amount, you know, but it's just about the right amount, right? So it feels good.
Well,
it feels natural.
That's part of the art of what you do, too, correct, right? I mean, it's not just numbers.
Correct. You know, it's a fine balance. Yeah. You know, it's knowing fundamentally what we have to do engineering-wise, how to produce this, and that's our job. That's an industrial designer's job to take all of that, but wrap it up in, you know, a nice bow and present it to the customer.
What do you think Uconnect gets right that maybe some other systems don't?
I think the intuitiveness is one of the keys. We don't put a ton of stuff just because we have a larger screen. We don't throw a bunch of stuff at it. I also think just the way that we've done the graphics, you know, you can tell exactly where you're at. You know, nice size to the buttons. We're not trying to do, you know, really small buttons just because we can fit a lot more stuff in there, right? We understand that, especially you're bouncing along, you're at a racetrack, you need to quickly get to something, you know, maybe to set up the car in a different sense. You want to do that in a clean way. I think the intuitive, just the easy to use, that's just, I think, one of the hallmarks of the Uconnect system.
Yeah. One thing that we complain about as journalists a lot is having to go deeply, you know, multiple screens in to do something. Talk about that a little bit.
The what I guess we would say it is the amount of presses to get to something, right? And I think we can combat that two different ways. From the interior perspective, we work on redundancy of controls. So the features that we would want a customer to use right away, we're not expecting them to go through the screen in order to get it. So, you know, heated seats, ventilated seats, your HVAC controls, turning their volume up and down. You know, those are
ventilation and air conditioning.
Yes. HVAC. Yeah. Yeah. That's a correct. That's a sometimes I forget. Right. We roll off the acronyms. Right. And so having the ability to get to those instantly is great. But then, you know, the ability on the system to tune and adjust a little bit. So if what we have brand new for the Uconnect 5 system is called our home screen. That allows you to say, you know what, I'm a type of person that I want my radio up. Maybe I want my navigation up. But I also want maybe some shortcuts. I tend to use these features of the vehicle a lot. So I want to put a shortcut together. And we can do that with the new Uconnect 5 system. And then, you know, you can have up to 5 of these home screens and you can flip through them. We have some pre-populated ones, so it kind of shows what you could do, but then the sky's the limit. Any of the functions that are on the radio, you can shortcut or you can have on this home screen.
What are some, just pull one out of your hat that is likely to be done.
The performance, hot link to the performance pages, especially in the Hellcats and Aster T392s that you're driving today, you want to get to, you know, maybe some of the telemetry numbers and stuff like that. So you can have that instantly at your fingertips.
So you can show that off to your, your seat partner, right?
Correct.
Look
you're
at
correct.
This. Wow.
Even some simple things like I tend to call my wife, you know, and so you can have a hot button right there to call your wife instantly, right? So it's not you don't have to go through the phone first, then get to it. You can actually have a shortcut done up for just calling a specific person, which is kind of a neat feature for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. When you test something like Uconnect, and you're developing the next system. Do you test with people as they drive? Because I think that's a shortcoming of a lot of systems. They would work fine statically, but when you're on the move, all of a sudden they become really difficult to
use.
Yes.
No, that's good. We do a decent amount of testing with consumers. I think the other hand of it is actually the beauty of up at Chrysler, up at FCA in Auburn Hills, the multitude of people that are there. And the ability to get into those hands, and it might be someone that actually doesn't even deal with the product side, you know, of the vehicle. So they're a perfect customer, you know, in that sense. So we, you know, combination of that, get early vehicles in their hands, start learning what maybe is working, what's not working, right? And I do think that's the beauty of building upon the system slowly over the years. Instead of quickly changing, doing this, and then all of a sudden, 180 degrees opposite, you know, because then you have more chances of failure at that point in time.
Yeah.
So it's just it's fine tuning that along the way, which is great, which is a great hallmark of the system.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was excited to use it today. It seems to work just swell. So.
Yes.
Like that
no,
lot.
That's great to hear. Yeah. We love it.
So I expect that. Anything else people should know about Uconnect, or otherwise we can jump into interior design for these?
No,
vehicles.
I think we touched on the hallmarks of it. You know, we've switched over to TomTom navigation, which, again, you talk about ease of use, natural speech recognition. The system will also start learning maybe your driving habits and start suggesting, hey, you tend to go to this place at this time every day, and actually when you get in the vehicle, it might pop that up as a, hey, are you going here again, right? That's kind of a neat feature that I think customers will start to love. Wireless CarPlay, Android Auto, being wireless is a great thing. Additive to the wireless charger that we have now on Durango, that's a great feature. So Alexa is also another thing. You know, there's more and more home audio, home integration of devices, and now Amazon will be in the car. So everything that you can do at your house, you're able to do here in the car while you're in the car, which is a great another feature. Yeah. So there's a lot packed into the new Uconnect 5.
Yeah, I'm going to have to spend a year just getting it all sorted out. So it works the way I want it to work. So
yes.
That would be cool. Let's talk about interiors, and especially interiors as vis-a-vis SRT.
Sure.
Right? I mean, it's got a dedicated mindset, that sub-brand, if you will. How does that extend into the interior design?
I think there's a fine balance. You know, there's it's great having, say, for instance, in the Durango lineup, we have the ability to have luxury. We have the ability to... I need something that's going to stand the abuse of your kids, you know, and your pets and stuff like that. And we can do that. And it's nice to have a niche within that lineup, like an SRT product, very focused, very very, in this instance, track focused. And so the materials that we choose are very focused in that. The Alcantara on the seats, you know, to help grip and hold you in the seat is a great thing. Just also, you know, picking up on cleanability is an important aspect of any vehicle. But then I think you realize that these are status symbols too, in a sense, and these are muscle cars. These are show worthy cars. So you got to also have some pretty cool things that draw your attention. So after you're done driving it, you know, you can park it somewhere, pop the hood, open the doors, and it still sells itself. So, you know, picking some color choices. Also, we have a brand new carbon fiber interior trim that we added to the vehicle. It's called forged carbon fiber. It's actually like more of a chopped up pieces of carbon fiber. And you can have fun with a little bit of that stuff for the SRT standpoint. And it, you know, it's just, like I said, it's a balance. It's a balance of not going too over the top. We realize what these cars need to still do, right? And that's a part that myself, the team, everyone working, touching these vehicles, you know, understands.
What is one or two things? What are one or two things? I guess is the proper diction there. That you're particularly proud of. You think, okay, this is really cool that I did in this car.
I love the ability that no matter what vehicle you jump into, that there is wrapped surfaces, soft touch points, all the way from the entry level up to the premium realm. I think we can't ignore, you know, it's a vehicle, you know, any vehicle purchase is a big purchase, right? And I think just making sure that it feels handcrafted as much as it possibly can, and just the attention to detail is there. So I'm proud that we were able to work with the team and get that. So on an SXT, you can get a ton of stitching, wrap surfaces, and things like that, which is great. Doesn't always have to be all the way up to SRT. I love the carbon fiber. I love the play on materials that we have throughout the entire lineup. I know today we're more so driving Hellcats and 392s, and so, you know, it's refined a little bit. But when you look at the breadth of the lineup for Durango, and that goes true for the rest of our vehicles at FCA, I think we do a really good job of something for everyone. You know, I think that's a great part of interior design and design in general, you know, giving each customer what they want.
Yeah. It seems like SRT is able to pull off something that I think is a pretty difficult trick, and that is you're taking a vehicle, for example, let's take a Charger or mm-hmm. something like that. The base Charger is something around mm-hmm. less than $30,000, mm-hmm. I think. Mm-hmm. And then you're extending that. I mean, the elasticity going up to 75, 80,
sure.
and in some special instances, over $100,000, that seems almost impossible, right? In a general business sense. Talk a bit about that.
Yeah, that's it's got a huge breadth, and a lot of our vehicles that have performance ends, you know, that you obviously the powertrain, the driving, you know, everything that goes into what's underneath the skin obviously starts to creep you up there. But you realize that there's a set of customers that they are only buying the car for that. They're buying the car for the powertrain. But then there's a whole, you know, group of customer base that loves that but wants to make sure that they're, you know, almost justifying their purchase elsewhere, you know, and it needs to perform other duties, you know, during the day, during the week, right? It can't just be a track focused machine maybe, right? And so that's the beauty we have is to create and craft the vehicle so it's dynamic. It changes, it's modular in that sense. We can pull parts off of this, put it onto this, you know, and be respectful of the engineering work and all the work that goes to manufacturing work, right? We don't want to drive our manufacturing teams too nuts, right? We want to make sure there's a fine balance, right? And that's our job, along with the brand teams, you know, to really craft the right approach. But it's amazing. It's amazing that these vehicles are sought after, you know. Our sales keep moving, they keep churning, and you know, we love giving buzz models. We love these life cycle models to kind of freshen everything up, and these vehicles are definitely the hallmark of that for the company. You know, the Chargers, the Challengers, and now Durango even more so. It's great to see the breadth.
It seems like the trim levels are tightly hooked up to the powertrain, right? Mm-hmm. Does that help you as an interior designer to direct yourself?
We love having constraints. I think that's the beauty of what I think, the goodness that comes out of design, starts with some constraints. If we had a blank sheet of paper, we could go every which way. We love having to kind of navigate and kind of slalom through this stuff. So it's okay. We're happy. We're happy to have some of these constraints.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it makes it more interesting, right? I mean, that clean sheet of paper maybe is kind of in some ways limiting.
You might spin circles.
You can go anywhere, right? You can just spin your wheels and spin your wheels and spin your wheels, to use an automotive phrase. Well, Ryan Negotti, thanks so much for being with us. We really do appreciate it. Thanks again for guesting with us.
Of course. Thank you very much for having me.
And stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back right here on America on the Road. And that was our interview with Ryan Negotti. He is one of the key design guys at Dodge, and talking about their performance vehicles. The really exciting 2021 Dodge Charger Hellcat Redeye, amazing vehicle. What they're doing with connectivity and how that works into interior design on vehicles, and especially on performance vehicles. So we thank Ryan so much for being with us. And of course, we always thank our buddy Chris Teague for being with us out of Maine. Thanks so much for being with us, Chris.
Thank you so much for having me, Jack. And thanks everybody for listening. And I will do my weekly plug for the show. If you like what you heard, go ahead and hit the subscribe button and leave us a review. It will help us go ahead and help us keep climbing the charts and get in front of more people so we can bring them along for the ride as well.
And of course, thank you so much for being with us. We really do appreciate you joining us right here on America on the Road. We also recommend that you might want to check out some friends of ours who do a show called In Wheel Time. They're based in Houston, Texas. Three really interesting guys who have a lot of interesting things to say about automobiles. So check them out, In Wheel Time, available at various podcast outlets. And also check out my book, The GR Factor, Unleashing the Undeniable Power of the Golden Rule. I think you will find that helpful in your everyday life. And that's what we try to be here on America on the Road, is helpful to you, maybe entertain you a little bit, and give you some information that can be useful to you. So, again, if you like the show, please pass it on to somebody who might also like the show. We'd appreciate that. And we appreciate you being with us right here on America on the Road. I'm Jack Neret. Thanks so much for being with us. And join us again next time right here on America on the Road, presented to you by Mercury Insurance. If you're looking to save some money, you should switch to Mercury for your home and auto insurance. Californians save an average of $670 with Mercury, so imagine how much you could save. Get a quote today at mercuryinsurance.com.